Welcome to this podcast by The Rocks Church. We hope you find it challenging and inspiring. For more information, visit therocks.church.
Before we launch into this final installment, I just want to welcome you again to The Rocks Church. If this is your first time especially, you are a very, very special guest. Our slogan around here is "No perfect people allowed." That means we believe there's nobody perfect. None of us who calls this just home claims to be perfect. And so whoever you are, no matter what you've done or haven't done, you are at the right place here this morning as we journey together in this journey of faith, okay? So there won't be any judgment coming from us to you whatsoever. If you are joining in from all over the world through YouTube and podcast, thanks for joining in as well. Well, as I said, today is the last installment of our series, Happily Ever After. Next week, we're going to start a brand new series called Psalms. I'm so excited about this. If you've been a Christian for a while, you know the book of Psalms is wonderful. It's a collection of songs of faith. So, and a lot of them, believe it or not, are very, very brutal. And they're just expression of our frustration, our faith, our love, and everything that we are as far as the relationship goes with our God. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be inspiring. So make sure you come. And it's a good time as well to invite your friends to come to church as we kick off this series. All right? Now, before I launch to today's session, let me go through again some of the assumptions that we have in case some of you are here new so that you don't get the wrong idea of what we talk about, all right? Number one assumption is this, that we're not talking about dating relationships here. We're talking about marriage relationships. So if you are in a bad dating relationship right now, maybe you should prayerfully consider breaking off that relationship as you find the right person for you, as you become the right person for someone, all right? So that's maybe what something you need to do. But if you are in a marriage relationship already, I believe it is God's will for you to stay married. I believe it is God's will for you to have a thriving marriage. I believe it is God's will for you to continue to love one another. So that's assumption number one. Assumption number two is this. We're not talking about your past relationships. There'll be no judgment coming from us here. We're talking about from this day forward. We're talking about your present relationship. We're talking about your future relationship as well. So we're talking about the future, not the past. No judgment. Number three, finally, very important, we're not asking you to stay in an abusive relationship. Okay? If you think your life is in danger, if you are in an abusive relationship, I want you to seek help. All right? Find any one of us that look barely a Christian and that look big and then bring them home to protect you. Okay? But this is very, very important. Now, a quick recap for the sake of those who are new for the first time and also helpful for us who've been here for the last 4 weeks. And this is what we've been talking about so far. Week one. We talk about how it is important, if you want to stay happily ever after, to not turn your marriage into a debt-debtor relationship. Your marriage is not a contract. It's not a transaction, all right? Because debt-debtor relationship kills romance. It kills love. You cannot see love. You cannot accept love when everything is about what you have to do, expectation, all right? Keep everything in the wish and desire box, not in the expectation box. That's week number one. Week number two, we also learned that a Christian marriage is a submission competition. That means if the husband or the wife race toward the back of the line to serve one another, the way a husband submits to his wife is by loving his wife as Christ loves the church, and the way a wife submits to the husband is by helping him, by going alongside him and support him in what he does. That's what it means to have a Christian marriage. We're not there to get something from one another. We're there to give something, to serve one another. All right, that's week number two. And then finally, week number three, because none of us is perfect, your husband is not perfect, your wife is not perfect, we need to have grace as the foundation of our relationship, all right? We need to oil that love that we have for one another to become awesome through grace. Every happily married couple knows this, all right? This is what makes marriage awesome. This is what makes relationship awesome. When you stay in love and when you are gracious to one another. All right, now, week number four. We all have a choice, all right? We have a very important decision, a very important choice that we make regularly that affects our relationship. Now, many of us, we're not even aware that we make this important decision, that we make this choice, but we do. A lot of us think it's just reaction. A lot of us think this is just a response, but actually it's not. It is an important decision that affects your relationship, all right? And the decision that you make is applicable, this decision that we're going to talk about, is applicable not just in a romantic relationship, not just in a marriage relationship. It applies to all kinds of relationships. So this morning, if you're not married, if you're a teenager, if you're a parent, if you're a boss, if you are a worker, let me tell you, this decision that you are making, that you're not even aware you're making, is a game changer in your relationship, all right? So we're going to learn together what this decision is. In fact, you know, you naturally make this decision when you start a relationship, when you first date one another. You know, you do this naturally, but over time, you stop doing it, and that's the reason for the decline, possibly, in your relationship, in your marriage relationship. So this morning, we're going to learn about this decision from a very famous passage in the Bible, probably the most famous passage in the Bible, from the 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 1 to 7. This part of the Bible was written by a guy named Paul, or he's called the Apostle Paul. He used to persecute Christians. He used to hate the Christians and kill them. So if you don't like Christians, you will like Paul. But then his life got turned around dramatically when he met with the resurrected Jesus, and then he became one of his apostles, planting churches everywhere. And one of the churches that he planted is a church in Corinth, and he wrote a letter to the Christians in Corinth who used to be pagan, who used to not have an understanding about who God is, and Paul wrote this passage known as the passage of love or a love passage, all right? So if you have your Bible, turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, starting from verse 1. Or if you can go to therocks.info, you can follow along over there as well. Thank you, John. Here we go. Verse 1. Paul writes, "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal." What Paul is saying is, if you can speak in the tongues of men, whether that is intelligible tongues or whether it's another language, or if you can press into the language of angels even, Paul says, but you don't have love, let me tell you, you are nothing. You see, in some Christian circles today, speaking in tongues is a sign, or in some circles, it's the only sign or the true sign of spirituality. And Paul says, no. Now, as great as it is not a true sign of spirituality. Love is a true sign of spirituality. If you can do all that, but you don't have love, Paul says, you are just a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If you see someone like me, all right, someone who can talk, someone with a microphone, you know, you think that just because someone can speak, you think they're spiritual? Not necessarily. If you want to know how spiritual I am, you don't judge me by the way I talk, by the way I speak. You judge me by asking my wife how I am day to day. You ask my son, Jaden, how I am day to day. That's how you judge someone's spirituality. Then Paul continues. Verse 2, if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, if you're the smartest guy in the room, smartest gal in the room, and if you have faith that can move mountains, and then Paul says, but you do not, there we go again, but you do not have love, you are nothing. In other words, you can be as gifted as possible, you can tell the future, you have a gift of knowledge, you know, you have all these wonderful gifts, even the gift of faith, but unless you have faith, Paul says, you are nothing. See, a lot of people equate knowledge with being deep, you know. If you're knowledgeable, that means you're deep, that means you're spiritual. No, that's not the true measure. Knowledge is not the true measure of spirituality or maturity. Love is the true measure of spirituality or maturity, all right? Paul continues again, verse 3. If I give all I possess, we're not talking about 10%, 20%, 50%. If I give everything I possess to the poor, and if that's not enough, if I give even my body to hardship, some translation says to be burned, that I may boast, but do not, there we go again, but do not have love, I gain nothing. So what is this Paul talking about? Have love, have love, have love. If I ask you a question, do you have love? Do you know the answer to that question? See, as I told you before, Paul is writing to a bunch of Christians who used to be pagan. You know, in pagan religion, you know, there's no such thing as love. You know, you don't love God. You don't love the deity. You obey the deity because you're scared of him, right? If you don't offer a sacrifice, you may not get a child, or you may not have enough crops at the end of the year or something. So it's based out of fear, their relationship with the deity. But then Paul, through Jesus, introduced this new idea that God is not just a scary deity. He's not a scary deity, actually. He's a loving God. He's a loving creator who wants to relate with you. And the way you relate back to him is not just vertically, but the way you relate to this God, if you really want to worship him, if you really want to honor him, the way you relate back to this deity is through your horizontal relationship. That's what Paul says. So if you want to know what love is, I want to know what love is. If you want to know what love is, this is what love is, Paul says. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud, to which we can all agree with this, right? You say, okay, it makes sense, you know. Love is patient. I'm still working on that, Lord. Love is kind. I try to be kind. It does not envy. That's right. It does not boast. Boasting is not good. It's not proud. Being prideful is not good. We understand that. We agree with all that. You don't even have to be a Christian to agree with this, right? And then he goes on again. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs, you know, to which, again, we agree with this. Easily angered, yeah, maybe we're still working on it. Keeps no record of wrong. Oh, Lord, you know, my wife is really good at this. She has this invisible drawer where she can just pick up, you know, oh, in 2015, 13th of December, 3 p.m., you did this something. You know, my wife is so good, she should teach history, Lord. But we all agree with this, right? This is a good, you know, definition of love. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. We like that. And then Paul concluded his description of what love is with these four very quick successive definition of love. This is what he says. And for most of this, we would agree. All right? But there's one that you said, I'm not very sure that's a very good advice. In fact, a lot of people think it is, you know, unrealistic to give this advice. But for the rest, we kind of understand. This is what Paul says. See if you can notice which one. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Other translation says, love bears all things, believe all things, hopes all things, and endure all things. With two ways we say, yep, that's wonderful, except for one. I mean, this one, I don't know why it's there. I think that's a bad advice. I'm talking about this one. Always trust. What are you talking about, always trust, Paul? You know, what if I have evidence contrary to the, you know, fact what you are telling me to do, to always trust? You know, I can't be gullible. I have to protect myself here. I can't always trust. You know, the rest we can do, right? Because it's not up to the lovee, it's up to us, the lover, except for trust. You know, you can't just trust anybody. I mean, always protects, we understand, yeah, I need to be there to protect my wife, my husband. Always hope, yeah, of course. Always perseveres, hanging in there, great. But always trust? Are you serious? Are you kidding me? You know? But let me explain it to you this way, okay? In every relationship, from time to time, there's a gap between what we expect someone to do, what someone promised to us, you know, what someone told us, and their behavior, what we actually experience. There's a gap. The gap can be big. The gap can be small, but there's always a gap, right? You told me you're going to be there at 5 o'clock. It's 5:30 and you're not here. You told me you're going to do the chore. The chore is still left undone. You told me you're going to call him, and you still haven't called him. So there's a gap between expectation, what we are promised, and the behavior, the reality. Now, what you do in this gap, no matter how small or how big, you know, you have a choice. You have a choice. It's not just a response. It's not just a reaction. When there's a gap between what you expect and what you actually experience, you can choose. You can choose to either believe the best, that's one option, or you can choose to assume the worst. Which one you want to do? Right? When there's a gap, and it can be, you know, a simple, it can be deep, it can be general, it can be specific, right? But when there's a gap between expectation and reality, right, what you experience, what do? Do you believe the best or do you assume the worst? Believe the best means you think, oh, there must be a reason why he's late. Oh, I'm sure he doesn't really mean it. That's believing the best. Assuming the worst means, you know, the conversation that goes in your head is like this. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have trusted him with money. He's so bad with money. His dad is so bad with money. His grandfather is so bad with money. Man, I shouldn't have trusted him with money. So that's assuming the worst, okay? What do you do? Now, before, you know, I continue, I know what some of you are thinking. Daniel, you're a pastor. What do you know about real life? What do you know? You're so naive. You think everybody's an angel. You know, let me introduce you to my wife. Maybe you change your sermon, right? Maybe let me introduce you to my husband. Maybe we have a different sermon now, you know. Well, before you tell me your sad story, let me tell you. I can probably trump your sad story with another person's sad story. Because in my profession, I've heard it all. Let me tell you, okay? And I'm not being naive, I'm not making light of your situation, not at all. But I just want you to listen to me for a while, okay? I want you to answer this question first. With everything that's going on in your life, where do you always default to? Do you believe the best or do you assume the worst? Many years ago, there was a book written by Marcus Buckingham. He's a great author, a best-selling author, and also a great leader to, you know, many Fortune 500 companies. He spoke a few times at the Global Leadership Summit. He wrote a book called One Thing You Need to Know. The basic premise of the book is this, that in any discipline in life, in any sphere of life, there is one thing that you need to know in order to be successful in that discipline. In that sphere of life, there's only one thing that you need to know. And to prove his point, he used marriage as an example, you know, and that's why it's relevant for us. Basically, there's a group of researchers who researched over 200 couples, I think. I can't remember exactly the exact number, but they researched these happily married couples who've been happily married for 20 years or more. So we're not talking about, you know, a newlywed. We're not talking about people who've been married a long time, but they just barely bear with each other. These are happily married people. They want to know what is the one thing, what is the secret to their happy marriage. Wouldn't you like to know? Right? This is worth coming to church for. I should charge for this. They found out the one thing that all these happy couples know, right? The reason why they stay happily married is actually not at all what they assume. You see, they were so surprised by the finding because in their previous study of people who are unhappily married, they found that they don't have the right expectation of one another. That's what happened. They have a wrong understanding of each other. So they assume that the answer or the result they will get back is that these happily married people, you know, they have lower expectation of one another. That's what they're assuming. You know, they have lower expectation of one another. But the result was surprising. The result came out the opposite. It turns out that these happily married people, they all have unrealistic positive impression of each other. Let me tell you, say it again. They all have unrealistic positive thought of one another. Unrealistic. And their conclusion is love really is blind for these happy people. You know? And this is what they said. A spouse's positive remark about each other created an upward spiral of love. You know? A spouse's positive allusion created this upward spiral of love because, you know, what you assume becomes a conviction. You know, you assume something long enough, you believe it, right? Oh, my husband is a great man. My wife is an awesome woman. You know, you assume that enough, you start to believe it. When you believe it, it builds trust, it develops trust, and trust is what creates a loving relationship. That's what they found. I mean, this is not a religious survey. It's not. The book is not even a marriage book. It's a management book. It's a leadership book. All right. And we think like this is weird. This is not what we expect. But actually, it's true, isn't it? When you first fell in love, let me ask you, you can only think positive thought about one another, didn't you? Right? You know? Oh, did you see the way she walks? She walks so cute. What are you talking about? She limps. You know, like, oh, this is so cute. Oh, he has got the most beautiful eyes. You mean the cross eyes? It's beautiful. Like, what are you talking about? But we do this all the time, naturally. Now, you know, even if your mom tried to warn you about him, even if your best friend said, no, don't go out with her. You know, you just said, no, you don't know her like I do, right? Why do you do that? Because you do this, right? But over time, what started as, you know, positive illusion, what started as, you know, this positive thought for one another started to go out the window. You know, when you were dating, you said, oh, I like you, you're funny. I like you so much, you're funny. And then after you get married, why can't you be serious? For a change, be serious. What happened? See, that's what happened. So that's why it's not such a bad conclusion at all. It is actually very true. And their advice at the end is this. Their advice is this. Find, when you see a gap between this and this, right? When you see a gap, find the most generous explanation for each other's behavior. Find the most generous explanation for each other's behavior and then believe it. Let me give you an example, right? He's not insensitive. He's focused. She's not impatient. She is intense. My wife is very intense. That's what you do, right? So the question again to you is this. What do you do when there's a gap between expectation and experience? Do you try to believe the best about your spouse? Or do you assume the worst? And then you're thinking, oh, Daniel. Let me tell you why I can't believe the best. At least not anymore. Because of this. I understand. Two objections. Number one, two obstacles. What you experience, right? For the past 2 years, he told me he was going to do this. He's never done it. You know, for the last 10 times, he's always late. You see, what you experience, he did it again. He did it again like a clockwork. So what you experience may cause you to be, you know, you might find it difficult to trust. I understand that. I get it. That, okay, that's one obstacle. Obstacle number two is who you are. Okay, because let's face it, you don't come into marriage as a blank slate. You had your baggage, am I right? You had your daddy issue. You had your mommy issue. You have your ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend issue. You have your ex-boss issue. You know, you have all this issue, and that's why for some people, they find it difficult to trust. They find it really difficult to trust. So the combination of what you experience and who you are make it very difficult for you to trust. I get that. Don't think that I live in a dreamland. However, this is what I'm trying to say to you this morning. Even though you're justified, Okay? Even though you're right that your spouse cannot be trusted anymore, you still have a choice what to do in the middle. You still have a choice what to do in the middle, whether you choose to believe the best or assume the worst. Don't think you don't have a choice, right? Even with all the obstacles, you still have a choice to make every single time. Let me read you something awesome, okay? Again, this is worth coming to church for. There's this professor of psychology from University of North Carolina, Dr. Barbara Fredrickson, and this is what she writes. When you feel more positive emotions, you form closer bonds with people. The more positive you are, the easier for you to bond with people. That's what she says. Increase your resilience and also become more satisfied with life. You see, you have a choice. If you choose to do this, of course you can, right? But let me tell you, if you choose to do this all the time, you will not be satisfied with life, right? Is that what you want? You want to be miserable for the rest of your life? So when it comes to others' behavior or attitude, this is what he says. It is best to assume the best. I don't even know if she's a Christian or not, but guess what? That's what Paul has been saying for the last 2,000 years. He says, love always trusts, right? Love believes all things. If you want to be miserable, go ahead. But if you want to have a happy marriage, you have to assume the best all the time. And this is how she concludes. She says, assuming the best often leads to actual best behavior, believe it or not. And assuming bad behavior often actually brings out the bad. In other words, what you do in the middle is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Let me say it again. What you choose to do in the middle between expectation and experience is a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know that to be true. You don't have to have an expert to tell you that, right? If someone assumes something bad about you, someone thinks you're bad wrongly, what do? You don't like that person because that person assumes something bad about you, and because you don't like the person, you behave a certain way, and usually in a bad way, near that person, which confirms that person's suspicion of you of being bad. Am I correct? That's what it means, a self-fulfilling prophecy. You see, we know that to be true. So, again, this is what happens. I'm not naive. When you assume the best, you may be taken advantage of. Maybe you occasionally you be wrong, all right? You try to assume the best, but it's actually not. It's actually the worst. But for the most part, you'll feel appreciative and peaceful with the people in your life, right? Always assume the best. I mean, we do this naturally with our children. Am I right? For those of you who have children, you do this naturally with your children. You always assume the best. You know, you think your child is the most genius of all the other children, correct? You know, like he's the best, the most good-looking and all that. You do that naturally with your child. Why don't you do that with your spouse? I remember I thought Jaden was like an artist growing up. You know, he showed me one of his drawings. Like, Jaden, that is the best-looking tiger in the world. He's a chicken, Dad. Like, wow, okay. I meant chicken. That's right. It's the best looking chicken in the world. You know, you always assume the best for your children. Why don't you do it with your spouse? Final pushback. Oh, but you don't know my husband. But you don't know my wife. Well, maybe you're right. I don't know your husband, maybe. I don't know what your wife is like. Maybe she's as horrible as you say she is. Maybe he's as bad as you say he is. But here's one thing that I do know for sure, all right? I may not know about them, but here's one thing I do know for sure. This is what I know. Every time you go negative, even though you're justified, you contribute to the demise of your relationship. right? Maybe you're right. Maybe you're justified. Maybe your husband doesn't deserve your best thought. Maybe your wife, you know, doesn't deserve your trust anymore. Maybe you're right. But what? You have two options, as I said before. What do you want to do? If you choose this every time, what you're doing is you're contributing to the demise of your relationship. This is as bad as the gap that has been created by your spouse. Do you know that? So, but here's one thing that you need to learn as well. No matter how bad your relationship is, I don't care. Maybe you are on the brink of divorce, okay? But here's one thing that I know, and every psychologist in the world will tell you, every sociologist in the world will tell you, every philosopher in the world will tell you, every theologian in the world will tell you, because this is how we are as human beings. The last thing your partner wants to do is to disappoint you. No matter how much you think they hate you, the last thing your partner wants to do is disappoint you, right? Maybe they act in a way that looks like, you know, they want to disappoint you on purpose. They want to spite you on purpose. But that's just an overreaction. Nobody wants to disappoint you on purpose. Nobody in the world. You know why? Because that's just not how we're built by God. Okay? That's not how we're built. And this is what I know to be true as well. Our hearts are drawn toward environments of acceptance. When you assume the best, what you do is you create a margin. Okay? That's why, if you go back to this verse again, love always protects. When you assume the best, you're protecting the relationship. That's what you do. Always trust, always hope. Nothing is impossible with God. Anybody can change at any time. Okay? Always perseveres, always sticking it out, you know. The assumption is it's not going to be easy. That's what the word perseverance means, right? But, you know, in combination, all these four, you know, forms a very powerful force for your relationship, because everybody grows in an atmosphere of acceptance. If you assume the worst, they'll be afraid of you, right? They may not show it. But if I'm in a relationship where I'm always being assumed the worst all the time, I'm always blamed all the time, guess what? I don't want to be close to that person. I don't want to call that person. I don't want to come home to an environment where I'm always blamed for my shortcomings, right? But on the other hand, if you believe the best and then you communicate it, by the way, you need to communicate it. This is how it works, right? Always trust. Honey, I'm sorry, I'm going to be home late again tonight. You could respond by saying, man, you do this all the time. I know I can't trust you. Or, always trust, respond this way. That's all right. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Okay, make sure you come home safe. Don't speed. I'll wait for you. It's a difference, isn't it? I want to come home to that kind of environment. Because when you do that, you create margin. And a healthy person, that's the assumption, a healthy person. If your spouse is suffering from severe depression or some kind of mental illness, they would need some help, for sure, you know. But an otherwise healthy person, I'm not talking about a perfect person, will move in that kind of accepting environment. And when you create that margin, a healthy person will move toward you. You will find this gap will be smaller and smaller and smaller. And here's the reason why you need to do this. Because God, through Jesus Christ, believes the best about you and accepted you as you are. No matter how many times we fail Him, right? God, through Jesus Christ, always believes the best about us. Do you remember the parable of the prodigal son? Jesus told a story about the father who has two sons. The younger one asked for his inheritance before his father even died and went away to a faraway country and wasted all the inheritance money. And when he came to his senses, by the way, coming to his senses, meaning like, I'm hungry here. My father in his house has better food than this pig's food that I can't even eat. I will go home so that I can eat. So he does not choose to come home because he missed his dad. He missed his dad's food. Read the story carefully. All right? And then what did the father do? Like, oh man, no way. I'm going to trust you again. You just wanted me dead, basically. You know, I can't trust you again. But that's not how he responded. The father waited for the son to come home. And when he was still a long way off, the Bible says, the father ran toward the son and hugged him and kissed him with all his filth and his stench, his smell and everything. No suspicion at all. Believes the best about the son. The father represents our heavenly father. We are the prodigal, right? God always believes the best about me, no matter how many times I fail him. And if I do the same, I will respond, right? Or my partner will respond the way I respond to my heavenly father. You don't become close to God because you are fearful of him. You become close to God because you understand how much he loves you. Am I correct? How much he accepted you as you are. If that happens to you and your heavenly father, why can't it happen between you and your spouse as well? When you learn to believe the best about each other.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more great resources and to keep yourself up to date, head to our website. Visit therocks.church.